Let me ask you, like, anybody have a favorite superhero? Like, favorite superhero? Like, thanks to the Marvel Universe, we've got, I don't know, hundreds of superheroes we can look at. You know, the classics, Iron Man, Captain America, Black Panther. You know, it's amazing. Marvel has made over $31 billion from, like, the 1,700 movies they've made on superheroes. Like, that is a lot of money. That's a lot of superheroes. And, you know, I watched those Marvel movies. I will admit, like, once you got through Endgame, I kind of lost interest. Like, I could follow the story, and now I'm like, I don't know who you're doing. I don't know what you're doing anymore. It doesn't make sense to me. But what I find interesting is when you think about superheroes, you notice, like every time the superhero comes and saves the day, there's always the need for another superhero to show up, right? The superhero comes, he fixes whatever's gone wrong. We're like, yeah, this is amazing. And then things fall apart again, and there's a need for another superhero. Like for me, like, again, I'm not super into Marvel. I was more of a classic superhero guy. So, like, I grew up watching He-Man. And if you remember He-Man, he was a superhero that basically ran around in underwear. And he had the sword, right? I think there's a picture of that. And my all-time favorite was The Incredibles, right? Mr. Incredible. He married Elastigirl. They had the three little kids, Dash, Dash. It was great. Okay, childhood, adulthood, a little bit of all of that in there. I loved it. One of my favorite scenes, though, from the movie Incredibles was in the beginning of the movie, they're doing this, like, interview where they're interviewing the superheroes, right? And so they've got Mr. Incredible there. And they're asking him, like, what's the hardest thing about being a superhero? And his response is, no matter how many times I save the world, it always gets back into trouble again. He says, I feel like a maid. I just cleaned up this mess. Can't you keep it quiet for 10 minutes? That's a good line, right? That's a really good line. And secondly, isn't that kind of the way the life is? Like, we go through life, and we get things cleaned up, we get life in order, and then things fall apart again. It's like this process. It just happens over and over and over again. Someone comes in and helps us clean up the mess, makes things better, and then we say things tend to get messy again. You know, to some degree, this is just how life works. We go through our life, and we have people in our life. Maybe we don't call them heroes. Maybe we call them, you know, people we look up to, people we depend on, people that help us through life. When you're young, like typically you're young, your parents are your heroes. Then you get teenagers and you're like, my parents are idiots. They're not my heroes anymore. Then it becomes, you know, maybe a friend or a youth leader or a teacher who's like influential in your life to kind of help you figure some things out. Then maybe you start your career. And there's someone ahead of you, and they're mentoring you and kind of giving you opportunities. And as you go through life, like that idea of a hero, that person who's helping you, it shifts, it changes. Different needs, different people step into that. See, I think heroes, to some degree, are real. There are different people we need in different seasons of life. Because what happens is even though you get through one area of life, it's like then the next area is going to fall apart and you need someone else to come along and help you make sense of it. There's always a need for another hero. Well, I just want to say welcome to Restoration Church. If this is your first, second time, third time here, man, we are so glad you are here. I hope this becomes your fourth, fifth, sixth time being a part, and you become a part of our Restoration Church family. I will say I love what God is doing here at Restoration Church. It's been such a great season of ministry, and I'd love to have you join us in that. We've been in a sermon series for the last couple of months called Origin Stories, where we're looking at the first 11 chapters of the Bible, the very beginning of the Bible, the book of Genesis, and we have the chance to look at a number of questions that are relevant for us, like the question of where did we come from, the question of what is the meaning of life, the question of what is wrong with our world? And you could change world with what is wrong with my boss? What is wrong with my spouse? What is wrong with my parents? Anybody, you could throw them all in. What is wrong with this world? We dealt with the question of why is the world so messed up? And most importantly, these chapters teach us who God is. And I'll say the last 2 weeks, we've been looking at the story of Noah and the ark and the flood. And as we were kind of mapping out the series, like Noah's ark is not a typical Easter passage, right? But I thought this might be a perfect way for us to celebrate Easter, is to conclude the story of Noah. Because ultimately, the story of Noah tells us we need a better Noah. See, after the world was cleansed of evil, right? The flood comes and gets rid of all the evil people. And it's just Noah and his family. They're all that's left. They still descend into sin and chaos and struggle. That flood couldn't solve what was wrong with the world. And that tells us we need a better Noah. Listen, if you're not familiar with the story of Noah and the ark, I'm going to give you a brief recap here for you. God created the world. He created mankind, created everything, and he said everything was really good. It was really good. It was great. Humanity had everything we need to flourish. Like you want to live a good life, God gave us everything we need. And then we saw in Genesis chapter 3, sin came into the world, and sin wrecked things. Sin caused problems, and then sin began to spread across the humanity, where sin just became compounded again and again, more and more and more. And God's like, in fact, it says in Genesis chapter 6 that the wickedness was so widespread upon the earth that every inclination of humanity was evil all the time. And God's looking at the world and being like, this is not what I signed up for. This is not what I created. And God's like, I got to do something about it. And so God says, I'm going to do a restart, like a hard reset, right? Yes, when you turn control, alt, delete, turn the computer off and turn it back on. God's like, I'm going to try this. And so he destroys all living things on the earth through the flood. But before he sends a flood, he finds Noah. Now, Noah, we were clear, Noah was not any better than any of the rest of the people, right? It's not like Noah was, oh, he's just this holy, perfect guy. No, he was just like everybody else. But he had faith in God. He trusted God. And so he finds favor. He finds grace from God on his life. And God chooses to save him. And God says, Noah, here's what you're going to do. I know you're living in the middle of the desert, but I want you to build a really big boat. You're going to build this big boat. And you're going to gather all the animals. The animals will come to you, and you're going to put them onto the boat. And God sends the flood. After 120 years, the flood comes, and God destroys all living creatures on the earth except Noah and his family and all the animals on the ark. And after about a year in the boat, Noah and his family, they get out of the ark, and they're on dry ground, and God makes this covenant with them. God makes a covenant with them and says, listen, Noah, listen, that didn't work. Right? Like that was drastic. I know that was big. So I'm going to make a promise to you. I'm going to make a covenant that I'm never going to destroy the earth by flood again. And he gives them a sign of the covenant, the rainbow, as a reminder to everybody, I'm not going to destroy the earth by the flood again. And again, like when we understand the story, here's Noah. Like Noah, you know, scriptures call him by faith. He was a godly guy. He loved Jesus. He loved God. He walked with God. He had the favor of God in his life. And now you're looking, you're like, Noah, like all the evil's gone. Like you got it made, bro. Like there's no one's going to cause you to stumble. Like you got it all set. You got it all figured out. This is your chance to be a saint. But here's what happens. Verse 20. It says, Noah began to be a man of the soil and planted a vineyard. Like, if you think about it, like, you just spent a year on a boat in the water. It makes sense. I want to get my hands in the dirt, right? I'm going to come get my hands in the dirt. And he decides, I'm going to become a farmer. I'm going to grow a vineyard. Verse 21. And he drank of the wine and became drunk and lay uncovered in a tent. Now, we read that and we're like, what's the big deal here? Well, chances are, this isn't his personal tent. There's some sort of communal tent that he is naked and drunk in, okay? And let's just acknowledge that's not good. Like, I don't know how many of you grew up in church. Like, I don't remember reading this in VeggieTales, right? This wasn't in the Precious Moments story Bible. I mean, like, really, this sounds like a good start to a country song, right? Yeehaw, right? And let me say this, like, this is one of the reasons why Like, I feel like I can trust the Bible because of stories like this. Because if the Bible was simply a book written by humans to try and convince humans to follow this God, there's no way this story's in the Bible, right? Noah is portrayed as a hero. He's a man of God who saved mankind, who came out of the ark. You come out of the ark, there's like rainbows and sunshine coming out of him. Like, he's the hero. There's the end of the story there. We're not going to add any further. But the Bible might have been written by God, but written by men, but it was inspired by God. And I love that the fact that the Bible does not hide the blemishes. We see stories like this. And you could say not all heroes wear capes, and not all heroes wear clothes, according to Noah, right? And in fact, it's not just Noah. Like, you read through the Bible, like, Abraham's the father of the Jewish nation, and he was a liar. King David, he was the greatest king Israel ever had, and he was an adulterer and a murderer. Peter, I love Peter, one of Jesus' closest friends. Three times he denied Christ. And the fact that the Bible doesn't hide these major blemishes from the heroes of the Bible, doesn't it give you one more reason that you'd be like, man, I can trust this? Because if it's written by men to convince us, like, these stories wouldn't be in there. But do you know how crazy this story is? Like, Noah, he loves God. He's got faith and trust in God. That's why God chose him. That's why God chose to save him. Now that the earth is cleansed of evil and sin, we're like, Noah, you got it all set, bro. Like, this is your chance. You're in this sterile environment, right? All the evil circumstances are gone. Nothing can make you sin. Yet we still find Noah drunk and exposed in his tent. Because the problem with our struggle and the problem with our sin is not just our circumstances or environment. Our problem is our heart. And I tell you, kind of what happens is we hear this story and we're like, that would have been me. I would not have done what Noah would have done. I would be better than that. And I think sometimes in church they say, check your heart. Like, check your heart, bro. Because the story of Noah is our story. The only difference between us and Noah is maybe we don't have a tent to live in, right? Right? The story of Noah is our story. In fact, I was a couple years ago, my wife and I, we celebrated 20 years of marriage. And so, yes, we got married in third grade. We married all this time. And 20-year anniversary, we were like, we're going to go to Mexico and celebrate. All right? So I want you to picture this. We're sitting on a beach in Mexico. Right? You got palm trees around you. You got the turquoise water. My feet are in the sand. There's some music in the background. I got a good book. My wife is next to me. And I sat in this lounge chair and I thought, man, if I could just figure out how to be here all the time, like, I wouldn't struggle anymore. I got no reason to be mad. I got no reason to be frustrated. I got no reason to be stressed. I'm in this perfect place. If I could just be here all the time, man, I would have it made. I might be the next saint, right? I might be something amazing. Well, a couple minutes later, I ordered a briscadilla. Does anybody know what a briscadilla is? It's kind of like if a brisket and a quesadilla had a baby. Like, it's amazing. It's a briscadilla, man, all the way. So I ordered a briscadilla, and I'm like, this is amazing. I'm on the beach, and I'm waiting. 5 minutes goes by. 10 minutes, 20 minutes, 25 minutes. And I'll be honest, I got a little frustrated. I'm like, where's my stinking briscadilla? How hard is it to make a briscadilla? Like, I ordered it. I'm expecting it. I'm not going to be hungry anymore, right? And I'm getting frustrated. I'm getting antsy. I'm criticizing the staff. And it dawned on me. Here I am on a beach in Mexico with my feet in the sand, and I'm getting angry because I have to wait for the briscadilla that I didn't even get up to get myself. I asked the waiter to bring it towards me. Why is it that we are so quick to get angry and upset when things don't go the way that we want them to go? The truth is, because our struggle and our sin is not a result of just our circumstances and our environment. Because we think, if I could just remove all the evil, man, I'll be set. If I can remove all the bad stuff, I'd be good. But that doesn't work. Because Noah is still drunk and exposed, and I'm still angry because I'm waiting on a briskadilla. Our struggle with sin is not just tied towards our circumstances, it's tied to our heart. And we might say, well, I'm not drunk and exposed in a tent. But we've all been places we shouldn't have been. We've all said things we shouldn't have said. We've all done things we shouldn't have done. And then we're like, I don't know where that came from. I don't know how that came out of me. Well, maybe because the problem is not just our circumstances and our environment. Maybe the problem is our heart. See, we need a hero, not just to fix the mess that we create and the mess and the environment around us. We need a hero to come and actually fix our hearts. And so here's Noah. He's wasted. He's exposed. He's passed out in his tent. And verse 22. Can you believe this story's in the Bible? It's crazy. Verse 22, Ham, who's the father of Bacon. Just kidding. He's a father of Canaan is what it says. All right. Ham, he saw the nakedness of his father, and he went and he told his two brothers outside. Then Shem and Japheth took a garment and laid it on their shoulders and walked backwards and covered the nakedness of their father. And their faces were turned backwards, and they did not see their father's nakedness. Ham goes into this tent, whatever this tent is, and he sees his dad there exposed. And we don't know his motivation. We don't know why, but regardless, he's like, guys, you got to come check this out. Come, this is hilarious, guys. You come see this. Did you hear what happened? Do you know there's a word for this? The word for what this is it's called gossip. Gossip is when we confess other people's sins. It's bringing to light other people's mistakes and their failures. We bring them to light without them present. And we bring them to light without a heart to honor them, but rather to expose them. And why do we do that? We like to expose other people's issues because it makes us feel better, doesn't it? Oh, you should see what Kevin did. He's an idiot. I'm so much better than Kevin. Oh, you should see. Oh, my goodness. And I know, like we're sitting here and we're in church, and some of us are like, I don't do that. I'm better than that. Let me ask you, what is your heart related towards others? Because maybe it doesn't come out verbally in your mouth. But what about the thoughts that run through your mind? Where we can be so critical and judgmental of other people, right? We stack up our parenting. Oh, you should see what they did. They don't love their kids because, you know, they did this or they did that. I'm so much better than that. We're stacking ourselves up, trying to make us feel better. Oh, well, look at their career. Look at their success. And we are judgmental and we criticize to build ourselves up. Isn't it the same problem? The same problem. And ultimately, for Ham, this is a violation of the fifth commandment. Like we know, you know, the Big Ten, the Ten Commandments, you know, don't do this, don't do that. The fifth commandment says, honor your father and mother so you may live long, you may have a long life in the land. For whatever reason, Ham chooses to dishonor his father. Some commentators think maybe he has a spite for Noah's religion. And he's like, hey guys, come look at dad. He's so righteous. He's following God. And look at him now, drunk and exposed. But the two other brothers, Shem and Japheth, I love what they did. Now they put a blanket over themselves and they walked backwards and they covered their father's nakedness. They're not excusing his sin. They're not removing his sin. They're simply trying to cover it. In fact, it makes me think of what Peter wrote in 1 Peter chapter 4. 1 Peter chapter 4, he writes, keep loving one another earnestly, since love covers a multitude of sins. Let me ask, how great would this world be? How great could this life be? Not that we would excuse sin or pretend it didn't exist, but rather than exposing and gossiping about others' mistakes, what if we walked backwards in the footsteps of Shem and Japheth, showing grace and mercy and patience and forgiveness to people who are struggling? right? In fact, I might even say this, it might be nothing more contagious towards Christianity than if we Christians would actually live like that, where our love would graciously cover a multitude of sins. Verse 24, when Noah woke from his wine and knew what his youngest son had done, he said, "Cursed be Canaan, a servant of servants he will be to his brothers." He also said, "Blessed by Lord, the God of Shem, let Canaan be his servant. And may God enlarge Japheth. Let him dwell in the tents of Shem, and let Canaan be his servant." Did you notice something there, though? Did you notice who it was that Noah cursed? He didn't curse Ham. He cursed his son, Canaan. I'm like, well, why would he do that? That doesn't seem like fair. Like, Ham's the one that did it. Like, why are you cursing his son? And I think it's because there's this universal truth, right? Where chances are, not always, but chances are, if you live a certain way, if you live a certain way, chances are your kids will learn from your example. They'll watch you, they'll learn from you, and begin to do the things that you do. And here's Ham, whatever he saw, whether he liked it or enjoyed humiliating his dad, whatever happened, Canaan's there watching the whole thing happen, learning from his example. And I think there's this truth here. Listen, if you choose to live your life in a certain way, maybe it's like Ham, where you choose to expose and gossip and shame others rather than caring and loving and helping them in brokenness, there's going to be a cursed existence for you. That's what happens. On the flip side, you see there's blessing for Shem and Japheth as they love and honor their father. And as I was thinking this week, I was like, all right, here we are on Easter. Why would we tell this story of all stories on Easter? I got two reasons for you. Number one, because the same stuff that is in Noah is the same stuff that is within us. Like the reality of it, the entire world, every one of us, we came from this family line. In fact, in Genesis 9:19, it says, these were Noah's sons from whom the whole world was populated. You know what that means? That means that you and me and all of us here, like, we come from a drunk, old, naked fella, right? This is our kin. This is our ancestors. This is who we came from. You go back 180, 200 generations, our great, 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 however many grandpas, this is them. And yes, by faith, God saved Noah and God used Noah in remarkable ways. And by faith, God can use us. But let's not confuse who the hero of the story is. Noah is still the guy who's drunk and exposed in the tent. And this disease that ruled Noah's heart has been passed down through every generation, from Adam to every one of us in this room. You and I, as advanced as we are, as good and moral and smart and beautiful as we are, our hearts are still poisoned by sin and selfishness and rebellion and animosity towards God. Yeah, we're looking at this story because I want us to see that this story is not about Noah, it's about us as well. Second reason why we chose this story is because better circumstances won't fix our struggles and our sin. And I think there's many of us that believe that lie. Man, if I could just get better circumstances, if I could change my environment, man, I'd be set. I wouldn't struggle. If I could just sit on a beach in Mexico, man, everything would be gravy, right? If I could just sit on the beach, I wouldn't be selfish. I wouldn't struggle. I wouldn't be in ball of an anxiety. I wouldn't be angry. I wouldn't be mean. I wouldn't have a reason to sin if I'm on a beach in Mexico. We just replace beach in Mexico with whatever circumstance we think. Well, if I just had kids. Well, if my kids weren't toddlers. Well, if my kids weren't in the house anymore. Then I wouldn't struggle. Well, if I just advanced in my career and made a little bit more money, then the struggle wouldn't be there anymore. Well, if I just retired. If I just had a better job. If I just moved to a new city. We think, man, my life is going to be easy if I just change my circumstance, and make things a little bit better. If I just had a spouse, if I just had a better spouse, if I just had a new spouse, if I just didn't have a spouse. See, this story is so relevant for every one of us in this room. And here's our summary. Here's what this message is all about. Here's what I want you to get out of this. We need a better Noah. We need a hero, not just to fix the mess around us, but we need a hero to fix our heart. And the question is, so what are you supposed to do with this message? How do we apply it? And there's absolutely a lesson to be learned from Ham and Shem and Japheth about whether or not we are actually loving other people and how we do that. But I want to focus on Noah. I want to focus on what do we do with this struggle and sin. Because Noah is not the hero that we need. Because the solution to our struggle, to our sin, to evil, is not just to have our environment and our circumstances fixed. Because our circumstances can't change our hearts. In fact, the Bible is constant about this. That better circumstances or a better environment or good works or religion or a progressive culture, all these things, guess what they don't do? They don't change our hearts. This is why this story and every story of the Bible is pointing not to Noah, they're pointing to a greater hero, pointing to Jesus. He's the hero that we're looking for. In fact, the book of Ezekiel, the prophet writes in chapter 36, he said, Jesus, speaking of Jesus, will give you a new heart and a new spirit he will put within us. He will remove our heart of stone and give us a heart of flesh. Like this is what Easter is all about, pointing us to Jesus. And this is what the story of Noah is all about. It's not pointing to Noah. It's not saying, Noah, you're amazing. Come and be my hero and fix my circumstances. It's pointing us to Jesus, the one who will change our heart, that will fix what's really gone wrong with us. The story of Jesus is the night that he was betrayed. He prayed. He prayed and said, God, death, there's got to be another way. God, there's got to be another way. Then he prayed and said, God, not my will, but your will be done. I'm willing to be arrested, to be beaten, to be humiliated, to be hung on a cross, to be crucified and murdered. Why? For the sin that rules my heart and the sin that rules your heart, the sin that rules. On the cross, he takes our sin-stained, polluted hearts and literally exchanges it for his sinless, pure, clean heart. On the cross, he was cursed so we could be blessed. He died so we could live. He became unrighteous so we can be declared righteous in his sight. He endured the wrath of God so we could receive the grace of God. See, this is Noah, and so much of the Old Testament is pointing not to our circumstances and our environments and our religion and our good works being what fixes what's gone wrong of us. It points us to Jesus and what he's done for us, that he died and buried and rose from the grave so we could have new hearts, so we could be redeemed. In fact, I'm just going to ask you this morning, would you just bow your heads with me for a moment? Your heads and close your eyes. Like, I don't know what brought you here today. Maybe you're here today because it's church and this is what you always do. Maybe it's because it's Easter and where else would you be? Maybe your mom dragged you kicking and screaming, bribed you with deviled eggs and potato salad. I don't know. Do you understand the significance of what we are celebrating today? You and me, is our struggle with sin is not the result of our circumstances and our environments, the result of our hearts that have been tainted by sin. But God, because of his great love and mercy, he sent Jesus to take our place on the cross, to give us his exalted place in heaven. He does this not because we're good, not because we're deserving, not because we've earned it, but simply because of his mercy and his love. And if you are new to this Christian thing, if you are new to church, listen, I don't believe that you are here by an accident. I believe that God has you here because he wants a relationship with you. The Bible says that we are saved by grace through faith. We don't have to jump through a bunch of hoops and try and make our lives better. We simply put faith in what Jesus has done for us, and we receive his gift of salvation. And I want to invite you to do that today. I want to invite you to put your faith in Jesus and what he did on the cross in your place. And if that's you today, I'm going to invite you to pray this prayer with me. Say, God, today I place my faith in you. I believe Jesus went to the cross. He died for my sin. He rose from the grave, conquering sin and Satan and death and hell. And God, today, I want to receive your salvation. God, today, by faith, I trust you as my Savior. I trust that you have saved me, given me a new heart, and given me a new life. And I ask this in Jesus' name, amen. Listen, if you prayed that prayer with me today, would you raise your hand? Let me see your hand. Praise Jesus. God is so good. Listen, today, if you prayed that prayer, you have been redeemed and forgiven and given a new heart. You are a new creation. And I gotta say, welcome to the family of God. And if you're here today and you're already a Christian, let me ask you, do you look more like Ham or Shem and Japheth? If you've truly received the love of God and he has covered your sin, is your response to love one another in the same way? To love like Shem and Japheth? Walking backwards, extending grace and mercy and forgiveness rather than gossip and judgment.